You're listening to the Gym Class Podcast, KGYM Sports Radio.
We welcome you to the Gym Class for a Monday here at KGYM on a hot Monday, June the 8th, 2020. Thank you for joining us. Do appreciate it. However, you're listening to us, 1600 AM, the main gym, as well as 107.5, the Gym OT, 102.3 in Cedar Rapids, and 106.3 in Iowa City. Thank you so, so very much. Got a good show coming up for you. Plenty to talk about from a tumultuous weekend that I think a lot of people thought they may have never envisioned as far as Iowa Hawkeye football. We'll talk about that. And also talk about that with Mike Halas, the sports columnist for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and get your opinions on it as well at 319-366-1600, as that will pretty much dominate the talk today here on the program. Scott Unash with you here in our studios on the southwest side of Cedar Rapids. Buttons on the other side of the glass. We welcome in Mark Dukes from his home on the southwest side of Cedar Rapids as well, the former sports editor of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Scott. Buttons, good afternoon, everyone. And great to be with you for another week, albeit a bit of a different one.
Yeah, boy, oh boy. Things really changed on Friday evening. First of all, we hope everybody had a great weekend. We always like to do that, and thank you very much for joining us. I must admit that I was kind of out of the loop as far as the weekend is concerned, playing in the first of the Crandic golf tournaments this weekend, and maybe that wasn't such a bad deal for yours truly out there. But by the way, hi to all those guys that competed and I got to play with over at Gardner. We had a great time, and had a good weekend, at least on the golf course as well. But yeah, Friday night, things turned for the Iowa football program. I think a lot of people perhaps thought they would never see something like this out of the Iowa football program. No program is perfect. I think we all know that, Mark. But I got to say that this caught me a little bit by surprise, and this has been first and foremost not only on our local front, but also on kind of on the national front as well, as far as college football talk over the last 48 to 72 hours are concerned.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot to unpack and untangle as this story has evolved over the last, 72 hours. And Iowa is in the national limelight right now. There's no question about it. Plenty of stories about what has happened, and it was triggered by activity on Twitter, principally James Daniels and Jaleel Johnson, among the most prominent former Iowa Hawkeyes, pointing out racial disparities in the program. And a lot of the focus, if not, well, the majority of the focus on Chris Doyle, the strength coach, who is the highest paid man in that capacity in the country. Kirk Ferentz's right-hand man, so to speak, for 21 years. A lot of the issues being directed at Chris Doyle. And yesterday before a Kirk Ferentz Zoom meeting with the media, 5 minutes before that meeting, Chris Doyle, despite the fact that he was told by someone to stay quiet, felt compelled to issue a statement rebutting some of the charges, disagreeing with some, and we can debate the merits of that, the how wise that was for Doyle to do. But suffice to say that everything I've seen and read, Kirk Ferentz is shouldering a lot of this, and maybe probably rightfully so. He's the head man. The buck stops with him. And despite the fact that he can't be everywhere all the time, I get the sense he's taking this very, very seriously and remorseful of the fact that he might have missed some things over the years. I'm trying to unpack all the tweets as well. I mean, you're talking about 36 plus tweets from former players and You mentioned the, or I mentioned the most prominent among them, James Daniels and Jaleel Johnson, but you get a cross section of individuals coming out. You've got players that have transferred automatically. You might think there's an axe to grind there. Maybe that was the reason they left the program. You've got other players who rarely or ever saw the field, but nevertheless raised issues with what they called racial disparities. And, you know, I'm trying to sift through some of them. And Cedric Boswell, you know, criticizing Brian Ferentz,
yep,
for saying that Boswell had a stupid tattoo. Well, that to me, that might have been, you know, insensitive or whatever. Was it racial? You know, Brian Ferentz could have said that about a white player. I don't know. I mean, that was just one tweet. I take all these tweets very seriously. And now today, Scott, the Twitter universe has opened up for current Iowa football players. Initially, the program was going to allow one approved Twitter a month. And Iowa quickly backed off and said, nope, Twitter is reopened for current players. And it's just opened up a flood of posts. And my take today is that there's a lot of unity among the current players, at least at this very early stage. You know, whether that will continue or not, whether this will be the most unified team in Iowa history, we shall see. But we are in the early stages, and I'm sure a lot of you folks out there have opinions as to what has transpired, and I've kind of danced around a lot of what has happened here, Scott. But we can pick this apart however you so choose,
and however whichever side you're on. 319-366-1600. I think the side that everybody is on is the side of, okay, if there is some injustice, if there is some inequity in the Iowa football program, then, and I think some of the tweets over the weekend did talk about this, that, okay, it's time to get this out there. It's time to get this corrected. And I think pretty much to a man, that is what the former players agreed to, that if we have a situation down in Iowa City where if it was inequitable, can we get it all on the same page? Can we make progress? Sports does follow real life a little bit in this certain way. Can we make progress toward being equal and just out there? And if this is what it takes, then fantastic. The other questions that have to be answered, okay, what's going to be the future of Chris Doyle? Is he still going to be the strength and conditioning coach? He is on a leave of absence right now as far as the Iowa football program is concerned. Brian Ferentz, who, as you mentioned, was talked about by some of the former players. His status, as we know right now, has not changed. I think Kirk Ferentz is taking this very personally. He got out in front of it very early, got out in front of it again yesterday with a Zoom meeting. And a situation where I think Kirk is, like any coach, genuinely cares for his players. I really do believe that. Can he be everywhere? No, he cannot be everywhere. That it's his own son being accused by some players, former players, of being a part of this, I think really hurts him. And my guess, anyway, is that Kirk Ferentz is going to not only take this very seriously, he has already taken it very seriously, but he is going to be very proactive as far as getting this taken care of. Just my thoughts about it, just right off the top, anyway. 319-366-1600 is text start to come in, and phone calls welcome again. That is 319-366-1600 as well.
And Kirk Ferentz has already established an advisory board and named Mike Daniels the chairman of that board. Mike Daniels, of course, had a half a dozen years where he was terrific in Green Bay. I think he also played in Detroit. But this is a man who majored in sociology at the University of Iowa, and was in that locker room, in the weight room, and has gone on to the pros. And this is a guy who's going to lead this advisory board, which apparently will report to Gary Barta and or Kirk Ferentz. And I think that's a very, very positive step. And,
absolutely.
I made a comment over the weekend that some folks took wrongly, I think, but I asked, you know, some of the same guys that have been tweeting over the weekend were members of the Iowa Leadership Council during their careers at Iowa. Among them, Michael Ojemudia, who ended up transferring, Amani Hooker, you know, Jaleel Johnson, Akram Wadley. These are guys that have issued tweets over the weekend. And I just asked the question, why wasn't anything done on their watch when they were on the Leadership Council? Now, the council is tasked with establishing policies for the team. And looking back over the last three, 4 years, about 25% of those Leadership Council members have been African-American players. And membership on the committee is voted on by teammates. So that's not a coach appointed thing. And you know what, Scott? It's probably fair of repercussions that any player wouldn't probably speak out, maybe fearful of, you know, being demoted, being silenced, maybe, you know, having their NFL career put in peril, in jeopardy, if they had said something during the time. But at the same, what's more important than pointing out racial disparities when you're a member of a leadership council? I'm not going back and blaming these players, because as a 19, 20-year-old, I think I'd have a problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, going to Doyle or Ferentz or Barta and saying, listen, these things are happening. So I'm not blaming them, but just pointing out the fact that these guys remember members of a leadership council in the program at one time, and apparently nothing was broached at the time.
Yeah, very much
so.
Or they were. Yeah, you know, yeah. Not sure what that went down. 319-366-1600. Many texts coming in, and starting off with our friend Cajun Troy, and she hits on your last point, Mark. It's not easy to speak out. These are kids, and they are going to yes, it's not easy to speak out, because you don't know exactly what is going to happen to you as far as repercussions inside the locker room, not only with the coaches, but also with your fellow players, your peers out there. I would agree with that, Troy. Thank you very much. 6429. Is surprised Doyle survived the Rabdo episodes. Says Kirk will do what's right. Looking back, the disproportionate number of black players who left versus white players should have raised concerns. And I think that's a very good point right there. 4398, Akram Wadley's mother appears to have issues with Brian Ferentz, and sounds like she is not alone. They say Brian is bulletproof, though. I don't think no one is bulletproof, Mark, at this point. And I don't think that's only an Iowa football situation. That's just a football situation. That's just a life situation. You hope no one is bulletproof anyway. That if change needs to be done, then change should be done and get taken care of. It doesn't matter what your name is.
It's important to point out that Kirk Ferentz, because of nepotism policies at the University of Iowa, does not supervise his son. That's Gary Barta's job. And certainly if Barta asked Kirk about the behavior of his son, I'm sure Kirk would weigh in on that. But it's important to remember that Kirk does not supervise his son. So, you know, I've thought a lot about this over the weekend, Scott, and I will continue to do so. And I keep coming back to the fact that while, you know, I'm a 63-year-old white man, and I've seen a lot in the Iowa football program over the years, not in recent years, but I've seen a lot in my life. But the bottom line is I'm not a 19-year-old black kid from wherever, whether it be Waterloo or, you know, New Jersey, what have you. I don't carry along those experiences. I'm not sensitive to, you know, some of the things that they might be. And I continue to go back to that, you know, and as sensitive as I think I can be or I want to learn, you know, going forward, like Kirk Ferentz, I'm an old white guy and I don't have the same experiences as these kids do. And you know what? I'm a guy who doesn't sweat the small stuff. Well, the small stuff to me may be big stuff to them.
Yeah.
So I've tried to keep that in my mind as I think through this whole thing.
Yep. And I would agree with that. 319-366-1600. Text line available to you if you want to talk about Iowa football and what the Hawkeye program has gone through over the last 72 hours. That's our phone line as well if you'd like to weigh in. Again, 319-366-1600. And as we mentioned, this made national headlines over the weekend. CBS Sports yesterday, not only talking about Chris Doyle and being put on leave, but also former players. George Kittle was on the front of CBSSports.com yesterday and talking about just his feelings as far as the situation is concerned. And it's interesting because I think to a man, again, most everyone is saying that they love the Iowa football program, the program itself. And if there is one thing that is kind of bulletproof as far as this whole situation that started Friday night is concerned, I think it is the Iowa football program. Now, can things change? Can things get better as far as the program is concerned? Absolutely. And that's why I started off talking today, that if there is a problem, if there is a gap, communication gap, whatever the case may be, it needs to be addressed. It needs to be put out there. And it needs to be rectified. And the sooner, the better.
I have and time has been short right now, but I'm really having a hard time believing that Chris Doyle is going to survive this because of the fact that he issued that statement yesterday, 5 minutes before Kirk Ferentz went on. And on the one hand, every man and woman has a right to confront his or her accusers. But when you have 36+ former players pointing the finger largely at Doyle, and not all, but a lot of them.
Most.
Where does the truth lie? You know, what rebuttal will Doyle have further? He always already has said that he refutes a lot of what has been said, but you know, Kirk Ferentz is in a tough position, and that's his job. But I when you have this many kids coming out and talking about the climate and feeling uncomfortable in the weight room, and this and that, and again, Doyle and any others should have a right to confront his accusers. But you've got to take this stuff seriously. And if it takes cutting ties with Chris Doyle, you know, maybe that's the right thing to do. I don't know. And I'm trying to not to get too far ahead of this thing, but I just don't think it looks too good for him.
No. Jeff, agreeing with your earlier remarks there. David and Hudson, our friend David and Hudson on the text line. If Doyle wasn't gone before his statement, he's definitely after the statement. 0560, Barta should have been gone after the lawsuit. Not a bit surprised by Brian Ferentz and Doyle should be done. Just their opinion, 0560. It's interesting. I'm with you. I don't know. I'm really searching to how Chris Doyle is going to start the football season, whenever that may be, as the strength and conditioning coach for the Hawkeyes. With everything like you had mentioned, so many of the players coming out with the same story. And it's just going to be very, very difficult, I think, for this program to move on with Chris Doyle a part of it. It was not a coincidence that Chris Doyle came out with a statement 5 minutes before Kirk Ferentz's Zoom meeting yesterday. And, you know, read into that what you will a little bit. But that was not a coincidence. That was Chris Doyle coming to his own defense and kind of doing an end run around whomever told him that he should not say anything right now as far as this whole situation is concerned. And it sounds like it was not Kirk Ferentz who told him that he needed to be quiet. So come to your own conclusions as far as who that would be.
I keep coming back to a statement that Kirk Ferentz made yesterday during his meeting with the media yesterday afternoon. And he made a comment that it's very important to understand the difference between coaches being demanding and demeaning. And if you've ever been a part of a football program as a player or a reporter, whatever, every coach in every sport is demanding. If they're not demanding, they're probably not trying to get the best out of their players. But where it gets demeaning, a comment in weightlifting, a comment on the field that you may not be putting out like you should be, you know, white or black. But when it's demeaning, you say something like, well, maybe you better go back to the ghetto. And that's a comment that was out there on one of the tweets. I'm not verifying that by any means, but, you know, as a black young player who's never lived in the ghetto, for one thing, that's demeaning.
Absolutely. No other way to say it. No other way to say it other than it is very demeaning out there. A couple more texts here before we get to the phone lines here. 1340 from the 714 area code. Kirk Ferentz is complete control of the program. He is a Belichick protege. I find it highly improbable that he is unaware of everything going on. His responses are becoming now, I don't recall, very troubling. 98-43, and may be right more than we know. It's the calm before a storm. And we'll have to wait and see if that is indeed the case. Let's go to the phones and bring in one of our favorites, Cajun Troy, here on this hot Monday. Troy, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, Dukes. Hey, Scott. Listen, I don't have the answers for all black people in this country, okay? But what I'm experiencing with my son, who's 28 years old, okay? And this has hit him hard, and he's angry right now because, and I think this is what happened to these, you know, I'm not saying it yet, but I just got a feeling this is what these football players, former football players, is going through. Because my son's feeling right now, it's like, things that he went through in his life in certain ways that he had to be and act and this and that. And so he's pissed off. It's like, you know, why did I have to care about what this person thought about me in the sense of whatever? So, and, you know, and wasn't able to say anything, but he held it within himself. And now it's just like, you know, that was just bullshit that I put that kind of pressure on myself to, and, you know, to be a certain way in this society. And I think when this all came about, and I'm not in those guys' head, but I can just know when I talked to my son about that, they just figure, you know what, I was in a position where I couldn't say anything. I know this is my career. NFL teams call these coaches up to tell them, you know, what type of person I am and what type of, you know, leadership I am and these things or whatever. And it is, and it's hard. And this is like, you know, it's just like they realizing these things where they had a voice. You know, they had a voice. And I think about this about with women who were sexually harassed women, but that was their career, and they didn't know what to do, and they didn't know what to say. And then finally when people say, well, God, that happened 10, 20 years ago, because it was in a position where they couldn't voice themselves, you know? And yep. that's just, you know, so that's what I'm dealing with my son, that he could, you know, I'm glad that he's dealing with this anger in with him himself and try to use it in a positive way, which he is, which I'm very proud of him. But it's just, you know, and I, you know, and being the mother to a black male, it is painful. It is painful. Can you be how disheartening it is that I had to tell my child, 10 years old, 11 years old, that people are not going to like you because of the color of your skin? Mm-hmm. Have no idea why, but this is what I want you to understand. Not, you know, and I'm not saying everybody, but this is what it is, and this is what you have to deal with. And he had incidents where that happened, okay, where he dated someone and the father didn't want to meet him because he was a black kid, okay? And, you know, and it's these things of this sort of whatever. So all this stuff, I think now is just coming to a point with him, and that's why I say it. So you just can't understand it, and I know people may have their certain opinions or whatever, but it's painful. It is the whole these things in, and they have to live this, and nothing you could do about it, because he had to experience it himself. True. He had to get to this point in his life, and now he'd have to figure out how he will move forward to do this, you know. So, and that's just my opinion.
Well, Troy, well put.
Okay.
And hey, well, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. 319-366-1600. And
I think two more things before we get to Michael Austin. One thing is the disturbing stories, not just recently, but in the past, of Iowa City law enforcement not helping the situation, and it's totally unrelated, mostly unrelated to what may or may not be going on in the Iowa football program. When you hear stories about kids getting pulled over and the trunks being emptied out because there's a suspicion of this, that, and the other thing, and you let them go, and the cops eventually saying, well, if we didn't own your Hawks, we probably wouldn't have pulled you over.
Yeah.
Now, athletes have been pulled over for legitimate reasons. I get that. And I'm not bailing on the cops here, but if there's one story like that, it's too many.
True.
And we've heard it. In this vein. And lastly, I'm shocked that it's largely crickets nationally.
That's what 6429 is saying on the text line.
Is Iowa the only program in the country who's got former players feeling this way about their program? I mean, Clemson and Utah have had a couple situations where their coaches have been reprimanded for comments, but I'm absolutely shocked that I was basically the only program right now that is out there on the right hand side of ESPN and CBS Sports.
Yep, same thing 6429 is saying, and people need to recognize that Iowa isn't the only place where this is happening in light of the larger discussions that are taking place. I think more players from other programs are going to speak up, and I'm kind of with you. I thought somebody would have by now, but maybe that is still coming. 9843, I did say the calm before the storm, but there was a prior part of that text. There's always a fall guy. I'm afraid this time it will be Doyle. There's more than one Brian would be next. Judging by Kirk's emotional voice yesterday, it's the calm before the storm. All right, we need to take a break. We'll get Mike Halas's perspective on all this with Iowa football when we come back. 3:31, gym class for a Monday, coming your way here on KGYM. It is 3:34, back with you on the Monday edition of the gym class on KGYM. Scott Unash and Mark Dukes with you. Thanks for the discussion. We do appreciate it. Iowa football, what everyone is talking about, and that includes our next guest, Mike Halas, through the spring and summer. We bring in Mike about every 3 or 4 weeks. And when I talked to Mike on, I think it was Thursday, when I contacted him, I don't think he or I had any idea what would happen over the weekend and what we would be discussing on Monday. But we bring in Mike. Of course, you can give him a follow at Halas on Twitter and read his stuff at thegazette.com. And Mike, you've been covering Iowa football for a good long time, and this was one of those weekends. Man alive, so much happening, and none of it on the field anyway.
No, it's I've been covering him since the mid-80s, and this is the worst weekend that Iowa football's ever had in that period of time.
I think that's well put. Well put.
And, you know, I should. It's like 1A and 1B. The Rabdo thing of several years ago was obviously horrible. I mean, what was it, 13 players in the hospital. So this nobody's in the hospital because of this thing these last few days, all right? But it's a whole different kind of horrible.
Mike, you can cover the team. You can be as close as you think you are, but you're not in the weight room. None of the big guys are. But you have interviewed Chris Doyle and whatnot. Are you surprised at anything you've heard or read on Twitter?
Well, what surprised me was the volume Friday night. I mean, look, there at first there were a couple of players who said some things, starting with James Daniels. That in itself was a surprise to me because usually people assume that when things like this happen, that it's malcontents, that it's people who transferred out or people who fans might consider, I hate to use the word, but busts as players, whatever. James Daniels is an NFL player. He was a tremendous player at Iowa, and he wasn't a pop-off. He just went about his business from everything I could observe and knew. Okay, but Daniel says something, and somebody else says something, and when it's just a two or three, I'm not sure what to make of it. I'm interested, very interested. But it became dozens. It became a torrent. And it was not orchestrated. It wasn't, this was independent thought. These were a lot of people who said the dam is broken. And these were a lot of people who were already carrying plenty of anger and resentment and frustration and sorrow because of the events nationally in the last couple of weeks. And these were people who in their minds said, enough is enough. I'm telling my story. So in that regards, it's been absolutely extraordinary. And I'm very curious where things go from here.
Yeah, and this is not an isolated incident, as you said, as far as Iowa. It was Daniel starting, and then the momentum, the wave kept going and going and going.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is strength in numbers, but sometimes, and I think that all of us can relate to this, you say, well, I've got a story, but it's going to cause me more aggravation to tell it than to just, you know, bury it. But then somebody tells theirs, and you say to yourself, you know what, that person did the right thing, or yeah, I'm not alone. And so somebody else tells theirs, and everybody says, yeah, I deserve to be heard, and this is important. And that's what's happened in a way we've gone, and it hasn't painted a pretty picture whatsoever. And the Iowa football program has no choice but to accept what's happened and to make things better, and anything less than that is going to be a serious problem.
Does Chris? Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking that either Chris Doyle is not a nice man or he's a bad comic, one of the two.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is America. Still, somehow, barely. And I'm a believer in letting all sides be heard. But here's what I also think, that if it's he said, he said deal. Okay, that's one thing. When it's he and 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 he said, you know, one of the great fears of mine, and I've got a lot of them, is to be accused of something that isn't true. You know, the way I look at it is, if you accuse me of something that I've done, okay, I'd probably have to face the music. But I tell you what, if 5 or 10 or 20 or 40 people accuse me of something, I got to look inward. And Chris Doyle puts out that statement yesterday. That was looking outward. That was somebody who said, I'm fighting this. And okay, if he truly feels that he's been wronged and he's been lied about and he's been completely misrepresented, he absolutely should fight it. But that's a lot of players who have said a lot of things.
Is Chris Doyle going to be the strength and conditioning coach for Iowa in the fall, or even much longer, do you think?
Well, I strongly doubt it. I mean, here's the reality is something has to happen when something like this goes, because it's already a public relations, I wouldn't say nightmare, I'd say disaster. And as you alluded to, it was on national news. It was discussed this morning on ESPN radio on your very station on the Golic show in the morning, followed by the Lebatard show after that. It's a terrible look. And it's if there isn't a change made, I think the players who have spoken out are going to start screaming.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's going to be DEFCON 1. And the question to me is, who at the University of Iowa is going to drop the hammer? Because of all the major college programs in this nation, Iowa seems to be the one that's most resistant to that kind of pressure. I mean, the athletic director was in a lawsuit of gender discrimination that Iowa lost, and it cost them millions of dollars, and there was no change made. Years before that, 13 players, as I believe it was 13, as we alluded to, hospitalized for an off-season workout. And not only was the strength coach retained, he was named given some award that's only been given once and never since, assistant coach of the year or most valuable coach or something like that. And basically a defiant gesture to the rest of the world. This is not an athletic department that, it's resistant to, I don't think I even need to explain that, but there comes a time.
Yeah.
There comes a time. This is a national moment in time, and it might be going on for years, but it's flared up in the last couple of weeks. And I was downtown Saturday night. This is irrelevant to the discussion, maybe, but I wanted to see the protest in Green Square. And what I came away from that realizing is that right here in Cedar Rapids, and Cedar Rapids is not Iowa City, it's a totally different place. But right here in Iowa City, there are a lot of angry, resentful, hurt people. And it wasn't some fun outing for people Saturday night. It was, I've got to be there. I've got to show people where I stand. And it wasn't just black people. It was white people. There were Asian people there. And I already knew. I feel like how African-American people are feeling right now, as much as I can know. But to see it and to feel it, I walked away from that saying, you know what? If somebody out there isn't paying attention, better start.
I think a piece of irony today, Mike, if I can describe it that way, is that this whole firestorm began on Twitter. And you look at Twitter today and current players are freed. Their accounts are not frozen anymore. And all I'm seeing is that a tremendous amount of unity among the current players. It could be rhetoric or whatnot, but if you read through and the current players, I think it feels like a moment for them that they want to unite.
Yeah, I'm sure. look, when you're part of a team, that's all. That's the number one thing you care about in your life. I don't, you know, it just is. It's trying to make your mark in the sport. It's trying to be part of a team. Trying, you know, to basically achieve your dreams. What you mentioned earlier in your broadcast and suggested or questioned, I should say, this weekend was, you know, where were these complaints when they were on the leadership council at their time in Iowa? And I think you answered it for yourself. But when you're a player on a team in college, they've got you by the short hairs. You know, the most powerful people in sports are college, major college coaches and professional basketball players. Major college coaches are incredibly powerful. And when you've been at a place for 21 years, you're genuinely powerful. If you're a third year coach who's got a career record of, you know, 7-20, you don't have a lot of clout. But when you're going in, you know, you've got 21 years and you've got a legacy, not just a resume, you got a lot of power, you know, and you've got the power to set up your son as the heir apparent. You've got the power to have whoever you want work for you. You've got the power to run a program the way you see fit. And human nature being what it is, even the best people can let things get away from themselves sometimes after doing the same job basically for that long. And part of the reason that maybe you're not hearing the kind of things from other football programs, and I realize you mentioned this too a few minutes ago, is because a lot of former players, their former coaches, their former strength coaches aren't at that school anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, well, they took care of the problem. They fired those guys. So there's really no point in, you know, criticizing. It's like, okay, that's their history.
Yeah.
But Ferentz is a historical figure in University of Iowa football. So that's what makes this, you know, even more so of a story.
Michael Oss,
how do you think he's handled it, Mike?
Well, they did the right thing as much as they can, I think, in turn. I mean, he got a video out there right away, all right. Met with the media again yesterday. They lined that up about as soon as they could. Okay. Get the words out there. Here's what we want to do. Talk, you know, I'm listening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's where it has to start. I mean, whether you're the most cynical person in the world or you believe every word he says is gospel, it does have to start with saying this has to be addressed, and I'm going to address it, and I'm going to listen to people, and I'm going to invite so-and-so, and I'm going to gather as much information as I can, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It has to start with saying that, whether, you know, every word is as heartfelt as humanly possible or not. It has to start there. And I think that the players that I saw who responded to that, and former players I'm talking about, I think they appreciated that. Then it's, okay, where do we go from there?
Which is why they're having that committee, I believe, that being put together.
You know, but I hear about committees, and you know, football is one big committee meeting to me. I want to see 2 years from now, when I talk to former Iowa players, I want them to tell me Kirk listened and acted. Period. The end. You know, if it's that, I think it's an unqualified success.
But it's
a long transition from he listened to he acted.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a process, and it's going to be painstaking, and it's probably not going to be enormous fun.
No, and it may, and it will deal with his own flesh and blood too.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, it's everything that goes on in there, and so may you know, as I've heard people say a lot lately, it's that Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. We live in interesting times.
That we do. That we do. Mike Colas joining us, sports columnist for the Gazette here at 3:51 as we make our way through the 3 o'clock hour here in this Monday edition of the program. And I think the it's so interesting because just you mentioned the fact that Iowa football being talked about today in our very airwaves nationally. And you think back Thursday night, Kirk Ferentz was a guest on SVP.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everything looked rosy a week ago.
Less than a week ago.
You know, his program, to me, was humming from the outside, just humming. Recruiting's great. They're coming off a nice season that had a real big finish that was really satisfying to people. The outlook for the coming year and for years to come, bright. But then you find, you know, here comes something that's more important than that, and it has to be dealt with. I what I don't like is when I hear people, and I've seen all sides of this. I've been surprised almost by how many Hawkeye fans have expressed to me that, yeah, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Hawkeye fan, and I love the Hawkeyes, etc., but this has got to change. I've heard a lot of that, but I've also heard from the others who said these guys are ingrates and all that Iowa's done for them and et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, you really are all the players to you, but entertainers on Saturday who after that, their opinions don't matter. Their experiences as they know it, their reality doesn't matter a bit to you. You know, I don't get that, and I never will. And I will tell you that I know of a couple of former players, don't wish to be named. And in fact, I shouldn't even say this much, but I know that they were checking into a hotel in Iowa City under fake names so that nobody bothered them. But they're down there, and one of them has been among the most critical. But they came back to Iowa City because they want to face things. And they want to help. You hear player after player who told their stories, but they also said, I loved my time there. I loved my experiences there. I love being part of that team. Love Saturdays and Kinnick. You name it. I really believe 95% of them don't want to tear anything down, that they do want to build it up, but if they kept their mouth shut, it wouldn't happen. So, you know, I'm a player's guy on this, and anybody who, you know, says that they're bad dudes or, you know, that they're trying to wreck the program, I don't have much time for that.
Mark. Yeah,
a small part of this, Mike, is what's going to happen in the fall. And Kirk Ferentz said they're going to be unified in what they do in response to the national anthem. And right now I'm having a very hard time believing there's going to be any kind of unity in that regard. But again, that's a kind of a small part of it.
Yeah
it is. Although it actually was one of the first things discussed in the middle of last week, I think, by Daniels. But I don't. Mm-hmm. I never liked this business of uniformity. To me, being in a state university, any university, they're supposed to foster independent thought and voice, and you be who you are. And this business that we've got to have a consensus to protest what we feel is injustice in American life, that it's just so disrespectful, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that's a whole topic for a different show. But let's say, okay, should we kneel before the anthem or at some point before a game? And let's say that 30% of the team says yes. Okay, well, the majority says no, we're not doing it. 30% of that football team would be a large number of players.
Yeah. Very true. Very true.
You know, I mean, it's so okay because most don't wish to do this. You're just going to stifle the others. I don't like that, and I hope that changes.
Hey, Mike, I hate to cut you off, but
okay, that's fine.
But we're to the end of the hour, and we could probably go about 2 more hours. In fact, Todd and Alex are going to and pick up the discussion from where we leave it here. But Mike, great stuff. Always appreciate it, and we'll keep reading and see where this takes us. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you. You bye.
All right, Mike Halas joining us. Mark, we got to go, but we will talk tomorrow. We'll talk more about this. And Tom Keating from the Iowa High School Athletic Association is going to join us coming up tomorrow. So have a good night, Mark.
You too. Talk to you then.